being dedicated, I had the right to ask for what I needed, and I, naturally, asked for that beauty which should enable me to hold men's eyes and attention, but instead I was given insight and imagination, and with the knowledge that came from these I created my own kind of beauty. It was said of another, she had the face that suits a woman for her soul's screen, and this was true of me. My face was pure Egyptian, slightly high in the cheekbones, which makes my eyes look almond-shaped, slightly aquiline as to the nose, for there was Assyrian blood in the royal caste of Egypt. My eyes are very deep-set, which makes them look darker than they really are. Seen in a good light, they are almost green, to match my tiger teeth, it has been said. I am supposed to be like Cleopatra, or perhaps Cleopatra was like me. I have an immense amount of hair of that very dark brown that is just not quite black. It is perfectly straight and sometimes I wear it in a knot on the nape of my neck, sometimes I twist it round my head in a coronet, sometimes in hot weather I let it hang in two plaits down over my breasts. Always I wear it parted in two smooth crow wings upon my forehead as the Indian women wear theirs. For this reason people have talked of colored blood, though my skin should give the lie to that, for it is the white of ivory, or of the great magnolia blooms that have no touch of pink in them. I am bold, even rash, in the matter of lipsticks, and I love long earrings. It would require husbands to do justice to the earrings I have possessed, jade, amber, coral, lapis, malachite for day, and for the night I have great jewels, square-cut emeralds, long, pale, drop-shaped pearls, and all the fires of the different opals, which I adore. I am a little taller than middle height, and but for my length of limb could walk straight out of the shop in whatever model gown I might try on. But I never wear model gowns. I wear my own fashions, and they come from the soft furnishings as often as not, for there is a richness in the great breadths of the draperies that one does not find in the dress materials. And who shall say me nay if I choose to wear what was meant for the windows of a Venetian palace? I like my gowns to hang full and straight and lie upon the ground around my feet, and I wear soft sandals of silver and gold and iridescent colors. Then I love furs, for I am a cold-blooded creature, it is my one physical weakness, I wear furs even in the house, and I have my houses hot. I love the whole skin with the great wicked head, and I love it to be a noble one, not the little mean mask of a fox. I have the pale skin of a timber wolf, and a blue wolf verging on black. Of the great cats I have a spotted jungle leopard and a lovely pale leopard of the snows from the Himalayas that the Tibetans say are the ghosts of bad lamas who die in sin. I like rings, too, so big that I can hardly get my gloves on over them, and bracelets like fetters on my wrists. My hands are supple with ritual, and I am as bold in my nail lacquers as in my lipsticks. I have used silver and gold lacquers, and reds so dark that they are almost black, and iridescent lacquers that make my nails look like opals, and I wear my nails long to match my tiger teeth. I like my shoes to be very soft and light and supple, like gloves rather than shoes, so that I can move in them without sound. I was trained as a dancer in the days of my youth, and I know the meaning of movement, how it should flow like water. I know too how the body should swing and balance from the waist, and that this is worth more in beauty than a slender line. I am not, and never have been, a fashionable woman. Not that I decry the fashions, they are for some, but they are not for me. Some say that fashions are artificial, the work of the trade, but that is untrue. Fashions change because novelty attracts and stimulates. But I who am the eternal woman, the archetypal feminine, I do not speak to the surface of consciousness, the sophisticated mind that the novelties catch, but to the archaic and primordial that is in the soul of every man, and I will pit my charm against that of any fashionable woman. They may have lovers, but I have been loved. And I will pit my silences against their speech, yet there is much in a voice, and the tones of a voice, they should be singing ones, even when speaking, sweet and soft on the lips, yet with reverberation behind them, for in that reverberation there is power, a strange power that beats upon the soul. I know it well, for I have used it. I shall tell presently how I use it. For I use color and movement and sound and light as other women use fashions, but more important than all these is scent. I value scents highly, and attach great importance to them, for there is a whole psychology and theology of scents. The scents I employ are spicy and aromatic, the flower odors are not for me. No one has ever likened me to a flower, though I have been told I am as beautiful as a leopard. Sandal and cedar and Russian leather, these are my favorites. I love also the after odor of burnt musk and the way it clings. Camphor, I like too, for its cleanliness. Of the essential oils, I use geranium, jasmine, and attar, none other. These are the psychology of scents, but of the theology there are two I esteem most highly, galbanum and frankincense. The harsh, musky, Hycinian sweetness of galbanum, that is earth of earth, and the sharp stimulus of frankincense, which is as if all the trees of paradise were burning. I have also a taste which I have never found anyone yet to share with me, the smell of iodoform gives me pleasure. So much for my personality, or as much of it as I can convey in words. The rest must be told by what I do. As to my mundane background, my little home in the hayloft I made when I was poor, and I made it to suit myself, but, as I have said, for what lay ahead I must have a background that would make people see me as I wanted to be seen, and yet, at the same time, I did not want to be burdened with elaboration. It was in my mind that a studio flat would serve my purpose, for the studio would give me space for what I had to do, and an artist's exiguous quarters would be enough for my simple needs. Provided I spent money on the bathroom, for I like a nice bathroom, a legacy, perhaps, of my Roman days. I did not easily find what I wanted. After sharp words with the house agent I decided to advertise, and learnt at a cost of much petrol the unbelievable optimism of people who have something to dispose of. It seemed strange that the work I had before me should be held up for so simple a thing as suitable premises, especially as I was not narrowly limited as to money. Upon each previous occasion when I had had to find a place for my work, it had come straight to my hand. My hayloft, my fort, had both come like that, as if I had held a wishing stone when picturing what I wanted. Yet now, with the real work just beginning, I was as badly off as Noah's Raven. I went over again in my mind what I needed. I must have quiet, that was a sine qua non. For the work of the higher magic can be shattered by noise just as a photographic plate can be spoiled by light. I must have a place that was readily accessible, and yet a little off the beaten track so that the people who visited me should not be in any danger of running across their acquaintances. It must possess one large and lofty room in which I could entertain, and another room suitable for use as my private temple, and then such living accommodation as a single woman of simple needs might require. Excepting, of course, the bathroom, which I knew I should have to be prepared to install myself, for I have yet to meet the artist who shares my views on bathrooms. All this seemed simple enough to find, and yet I could not find it. Then suddenly there came to my mind the memory of the dingy little church that had had such a depressing effect on me as I came into London at the end of my dreadful drive. I had never seen a property I liked less. But was it possible that this was the destined place, that had been waiting for me all those years while its to-let board gathered grime, and that the other eligible residences, knowing this, had fled at my approach in order to leave it a clear field? I only hoped this was as impossible as it sounded, but a sense of duty compelled me to give it its chance. It was certainly very suitable so far as position went. In its quiet cul-de-sac beside the river, it was well off the beaten track. For, to the people I sought, the Surrey side was as remote as the mountains of the moon, yet it was easily accessible, for one only had to cross the neighbouring bridge and one was back in civilised parts. So I took my little car and, impelled, as I have said, by a strong sense of duty, went down to have a look at it. I went with the streaming traffic over Vauxhall Bridge and found myself in the mysterious land where Wandsworth abuts on Battersea. I had for my landmark the great chimney, standing up like a beacon with its pale plume of smoke, and yet could I find that spot where I took the wrong turning? I could not. The curse was still on me, and the little church, offended perhaps by my lack of discernment, hid its face. No one, neither the policeman, nor the postman, nor the street sweepers, could tell me anything about it, and indeed it was just as well I had consulted the police early in my search, or I am sure I should have been arrested as a suspicious character long before the day was out, so thoroughly did I comb that dingy district. When at length I gave it up as hopeless and made for Vauxhall Bridge, it was once again the peak hour of the evening's traffic, so, having got across the bridge, I turned along Grosvenor Road intending to slip down a by-street to avoid the congestion of the main roads. And then I saw it. The setting sun was sending low, level beams across the river, and on the far bank the stained glass of its west window lit up like a jewel. I turned my car so sharply that I nearly ran over a man who was crossing the road, and who, being a cross-grained individual, did not accept my apologies with at all a good grace, but told me what he thought of me, in which he was probably quite correct, for I had very nearly dispatched him to eternity. Then I told him what I thought of him, and he lifted his hat and said, "Oh, beg your pardon, madam, and I saw that allowances must be made for him as he had red hair." I had thought for a moment, too, that he was a doctor, and I have a liking for doctors, for a faint waft of iodoform form came into the car as he stood staring at me angrily. But the old-fashioned, double-fronted house he entered bore no brass plate. If he had been a doctor, I think I should have pursued the acquaintance then and there, for there was something about that man that was rather striking, a sense of power and dynamic drive, and it was such as he that I had in mind to help me in my work. Moreover, a doctor, with his special knowledge, is often very useful in occultism. But perhaps it was just as well I had no designs on this individual, for not only was he in a very bad temper from having been half run over and wholly scared, but he must have been a dour type at the best of times, and encased in the plate armor of middle-class convention and professional prestige. A professional man I judged him to be from his bead armed to you air when angry, which is not developed by those who serve either God or Mammon. Footnote: see the Sea Priestess. Chapter 5. I had no difficulty in finding my church after that, and a very few moments at E.M. driving brought me to it. But how different it looked now. Then it had seemed sinister. It had rather lovely lines, as if someone had cut down a cathedral, and with its pantiled roof rising to a lantern it looked like a little bit of Italy. The London grime that lay thick upon it had caused the soft stone of its facing to weather rapidly, giving it an air of antiquity to which it was not entitled, being, if the truth were known, a bit of Victorian Gothic toned down by dirt. The to-let board stated that a caretaker was within, so I beat upon the door with an enormous knocker, raising such a din that I thought I should bring the whole district to its doors, but nothing happened, not even a fold of the Nottingham lace curtains all down the road was stirred by an inquisitive hand. I did not repeat the fusillade. If the caretaker were within he would have come rushing out, and was making a note of the address of the agents, when there issued from a little house tucked away under the wing of the church which looked like a gatekeeper's lodge on a country estate, a man in a bowler hat. The to-let board had not been strictly accurate, the caretaker was alongside, not within. There is something about bowler hats that always rouses my prejudices, they are so offensively unexceptionable. No man whom I have called friend has ever worn one. Slouch hats, pork pies, trilbies, Homburgs, cloth caps, even, under certain circumstances, billycocks, but never a bowler among them. But this was not an ordinary bowler, it had been tarred. This went a long way towards removing my prejudices, for I had never before known a man who tarred his hats. There was a vaguely horsey air about this individual, and I guessed, and subsequently found I was right, that he was a retired cabbie. "Ed, I want to see the place, laddie?" he inquired. I said I did, and he produced from his hip pocket a key so huge that it would certainly have prevented him from sitting down if he had carried it in the more accessible trouser pocket. The heavy door creaked on hinges so corroded that it was evident he thought that the light of his countenance on its exterior was all the caretaking the property needed. However, although it was close and unaired. The place did not smell damp. We entered a broad lobby that ran the length of the Faitilda section aid and was partitioned off from the main hall by paneling of yellow varnished pitch pine. We went on through double doors, and I found myself in a typical chapel interior, save that at the east end there was a sanctuary, complete with saints in niches and a lofty stained glass window representing a most horrible scene from the Last Judgment. At the other end was a rose window over the gallery which appeared to consist of two concentric circles of devils. Whatever sect had owned this tabernacle must have held some pretty lurid views. Whoever had built that place had evidently employed a good architect, for the proportions were lovely. It looked, however, as if it had been abandoned before it was quite finished, for there were no pews or pulpit, and no marks on the stone-flagged floor to indicate that there ever had been any. I walked slowly across its broad expanse and mounted the three steps into what appeared to be an Anglican chancel intended for ritualistic uses, for it was large in proportion to the nave, and if that was what one should call it in an obvious conventicle, and discovered to my amazement that what I had taken for an outsize in altars was actually a small stone tank like a miniature swimming bath. Ayo, what in the world is this? I asked the caretaker. Ayo, that's the font. He answered, surveying it with obvious pride, grimy and unprepossessing as it was. Was this a Baptist chapel? I inquired, thinking that its ornate architecture was not quite the usual style of that austere set. Well, it was, and it wasn't. He baptized A.M., but he also had a service. He was a halfway, you might say, between the Baptists and the Catholics. This horrible hybrid left me dumb. How could it conceivably work? One would imagine that the two halves of his soul, whoever A.E. here might be, would spend all their time cursing and excommunicating each other. A.O. What religion did he belong to? I asked when I had recovered my poise. A.O. He didn't belong to no religion, bloody. A.E. run A.E.'s own. Called themselves the resurrectionists, they did. A remembering the other connotation of the word, I could not repress a smile, which he saw and answered. Ayo, no, mum, not body snatchers. They reckoned they'd rise again, all on A.M., just as they was, so they dressed accordingly, and A.E. give A.M. baptism all over every Sunday, duct A.M. right under, so's they'd rise nice on a T.M. clean. A.O. did he have many followers? I asked, thinking of all the Sundays in Trinity, and wondering how many could be found to put up with such drastic salvation, for there appeared to be no way of heating the tank. A.E. a tidy few, I said he. A.O. and what was the end of it all? I inquired. A.O. well, you see, mum, A.E. believed in total immersion, like the Baptists, but then A.E. also believed in infant baptism, like the Catholics. And A.E. immersed an infant and it died, and A.E. up and A.E. hanged A.self. Never even stopped to tyke up the collection, A.E. didn't, and so the place was never paid for, and there. Builders went bust on a T.M. the agents collared it, and there it is, just as it alas was, these 40 years. A.O. there must be a curse on it, I said. A.O.O., I dunno, it's suited me very nicely, I said he with a wink. A.O. if you was to take it, mum, would you be wanting a T.M. caretaker? A.O. no, I said, A.O. should not, but I could find plenty of work for a handyman, and might be able to give your wife some cleaning. My wife was took off to the asylum this morning a T.M., bloody, but I could do anything you wanted in the way of cleaning a T.M. I'm real handy, I am. You see, of recent years she got that religious she wouldn't do a and this turn, and I had to do everything. Cooking a T.M. Cleaning a T.M. Make the beds. I'm real Andy, bloody. I'm very sorry to hear that, I said, hoping he would know I was referring to his wife, not to his cooking. Oh well, Liddy, perhaps it's all for the best. I could do for ye fine, mum, if you'd give a chance. A.O. don't know that I'm coming here yet, I said. A.O. everyone connected with the place seems to go either bankrupt or mad. A.O. not me, bloody, I ain't bust on a T.M. I ain't bats. A.O. but your wife. airbags but not bust, bloody. She'd a nice bit o' TM cleaning a TM if she'd only a done it. But she got that religious, you see, she couldn't put her mind to it. They said to her, Mrs. Meyard, you love to go if you can't do better than this. Says she, the Lord's come in a TM. Well. Ain't yet. Won't you get on with your work while you're waiting a TM? ATM they says to her. But she wouldn't. It weren't no use. Couldn't give her mind to it, you see. Then she took off her clothes on a TM, tried to baptize herself in the kitchen copper on a TM. They sent her good heavens. I said. Was the kitchen copper alight when she did it? No, mum. There a lay prophet didn't believe in no comforts. I had her for a bit, but it weren't no use. She cape a TM yelling a TM the Lord was after her. Seems to get aim mixed up with the devil towards the end on a TM couldn't tell aim apart, so I had to have aim fetched away, and now she's gone. On a TM if you want to know the truth, bloody, I was having a TM one with myself to cheer myself up when I had you knock on a TM. You must be feeling very lonely, I said, though he looked exceedingly cheerful. So. It's lonely, but it's peaceful. There weren't no peace for nobody while she was saving a TM her soul. I tell you straight, bloody, I wouldn't have saved it if it had been mine. I'd have chucked it away if I couldn't have give it away. It wasn't worth saving a TM, it was such a worry to her. I thought I had better stop this flood of psychology. Are the agents near here? I asked. Yes, bloody, just around the bend. But if you'll wait till tomorrow before you see A.M., I'll chuck a few buckets of water about the floor and tell A.M. the roof's leaking a T.M. on a T.M. then they'll let it go cheap. I'd like you to have it, for I think you are a T.M. Yeah, you'd suit each other fine, though I won't deceive your mummers to me having a T.M. been in quad. In the face of such frankness, what could I do save tell him that if I took the place the job was his? As a matter of fact, he would probably suit me much better than a woman, for he would be less likely to take fright at my doings. Well, I bought the place, though not without many qualms, for I am sensitive to atmospheres, and I wondered what sort of atmosphere would be left behind by the homicidal prophet and his suicidal congregation. I could picture so clearly the kind of crack-brained fanatic it must have been who had gathered together the aetity few our followers for his crazy views and produced the architectural hybrid I proposed to inhabit. Then there were the religious opinions of this non-conformist with a liking for ritual. The Baptist and the Catholic sides of his nature would both hate me equally, but as they would hate me for different reasons, it was possible they might cancel each other out. The moment I had obtained possession I did a thorough exorcism with the banishing ritual of the greater pentagram. I wondered what Meyard would think when he smelt the incense, but all he said was, you needn't worry about the drines, bloody, for there ain't none, ATM and this I found to be true, which explained the price at which I got the place. It was just as well that this was low, for I was put to a pretty penny of expense before I was through with it. There is an old saying that whatever is wanted for magical purposes must be bought without haggling, but there is a limit to that sort of thing. I did not haggle over the bathroom, however. It was of a very pale pink quartz like marble as to the walls, and the floor was black marble, warm to the foot because the heating was under it. My bath was black and looked like a tomb, but inside it was of the same pale fawnish pink as the walls. It was square, too, and had to be specially made for me, which was an extravagance, but baths are one of my weaknesses. I got the idea from the prophet's dreadful font, though I would never admit it, but Mr. Meyard guessed as much, and said to me with a wink, AOCU believes in total immersion, hun, mum.AO believe in having what I like, I said. Most folk does that, if ye comes to think of it, only when they gets it, they finds they doesn't like it. My bedroom I had of the curious blue green of shagreen, which is also the green of the sea on a rocky coast. It held no furniture save my bed and my dressing table and a cabinet beside my bed, all else was fitments. Such of the wall as was not mirrors was worked in bas-relief in the semblance of breaking waves. It faced east, as a bedroom should, though I nearly had to tear the place to pieces, to get it so, for the non-ecclesiastical accommodation was exiguous. It was only the fact that the prophet had been obliged to provide dressing accommodation for his drowned rats after baptism, that had made the place a practical proposition for me. His vestry was my kitchen, and the places where he separated the sheep from the goats were respectively my bedroom and bathroom. He must have expected mass conversions, for they were of by no means inconsiderable dimensions. For the rest, I lived and moved and had my being in the great hall. This, as I replanned it, began to take on a strange and unique beauty. The pitch pine panelling was replaced with old oak, and dark parquetry covered the cold grey flags. I made no attempt to clean the stonework, which rose in groins to a central boss. The plaster in between, mellowed to the colour of old parchment, still bearing the tarnished shadows of golden stars. All this I left as I found it. But I smashed those dreadful stained glass windows to pieces and out of their multicolored fragments had them remade into a bewildering mosaic like Rococo jewel. Into the pointed arches of the chancel I put leaded windows of clear glass through which I could see out into what had been a dingy and cathorned dungeon but was now like a corner of an Italian courtyard. I think the architect must have had some Italian church in his mind, for the place responded instantly to figs in great earthenware jars and a vine trained over a trellis. In the summer I intended to focus my existence in the chancel where the sun came through the leaves of a great plane tree, graceful as a willow because it had never known the pruning saw, and in the winter I would retire to the panelled ingle nook surrounding the vast fireplace I had built. Resisting all blandishments of the builder to buy a ready-made one, I had stood over the masons while they laid a hearth bigger than most folks at E.M. dining tables and sloped the back to my liking, and this, with a great copper canopy, was all the grate I had. On it, 3-foot logs and a bank of peat blazed in the winter and smouldered in the summer, for the great hall was cool even in the hottest weather. There were deep divans, and great chairs, and low tabrets and poofs, and cabinets to hold my beautiful things and display them, and I had as many cushions as Gabriel D'Annunzio. In the gallery, where the casual visitor could not get at them, were my books. Not that I had many casual visitors, however, for I had work to do and no time to waste on them, being there for a purpose. Callers were not encouraged, and Mr. Meillard's way of discouraging callers was devastating. Such people as I saw for a reason, and they knew it. Mr. Meillard himself was wonderful, once the problem of his hat was solved. He was bald as the proverbial egg, and explained, most reasonably, that draughts blew on his pate in the winter and the flies walked about on it in summer and he had to have some sort of shelter, so we compromised on a black velvet skullcap that made him look like a gnome, with his bat ears and pug nose, and the effect was very fine indeed. Seen against a background of old oak, he was, in fact, the ideal retainer for such a person as myself, with a reputation for vampiricism to maintain, and no one could tell from the looks of him that he had been a cab driver. He also developed, under my tuition, into a most admirable cook. It was a strange M.A. tilde copyright age. There was I, with my cab driver and my cooking, tucked away in an abandoned chapel in a Surrey side alley, yet even priestesses of strange cults have to live while they are an incarnation, and there are stranger cults than mine. My establishment sounds simple, and so it was in its fastidious way, but it took time to equip, for I would not go to the big stores and order this and that, but picked up my things as I found them from queer small shops inside streets of mean parts. For the one finds strange and beautiful things if one knows where and how to look, and what to look for. Heavy Victorian mahogany covered with knobs and curlicues is one thing, and the same piece, denuded of its trimmings and lacquered and dusted with gold, is another. Little by little I got my new home together, while living in my old one, but it was late summer before I moved in. that moving in was something of an ordeal. I am, as I have already said, very sensitive to atmospheres. I had performed an efficacious banishing and the place was inoffensive, but it was as devoid of personality as outer space. I had had many picnic meals in it while the workmen were still in possession, but that is not the same as entering in and living there, as I was very soon to learn.